Welcome to the Page 2 podcast presented by Chase Oaks Church, where we go behind the headlines and beyond Sunday morning sermons to discuss in-depth issues of faith, culture, and life. I'm Eric Torrance, and last week Greg and I had a conversation with Kevin Honoré about how to engage in a world full of need. It's a topic that's so complex that we thought this was worth a two-parter. And so if you haven't listened to part one, you'll definitely want to check that out because Kevin shares some really helpful insight about his organization, Bright Hope World, and some great guidelines for how to really make sense of a complex world and how to step in a thoughtful way to make a difference in a world full of need. But today, we're going to hear the stories of Blake and Allie Bergstrom, who have a really unique approach to how they've engaged a world full of need with their family, which is pretty inspiring, but it's also something that will be helpful to us in thinking about how to live more open-handedly and how God might surprise us in the direction that he leads us. So let's join in the conversation that Greg and I had with Blake and Allie Bergstrom.
Okay, so I'm super excited that we get to have a conversation now with Blake and Allie Bergstrom. Blake is one of the teaching pastors here at Chase Oaks, and so anybody here at Chase Oaks is well familiar with Blake. But I've probably just heard a few him mention a few things about the nonprofit that he works with, and I just felt like in this conversation about how do we respond to a world full of need in a way that is not paralyzing or in a way that's not discouraging or a way that, or how do we respond in a way that could actually do some good and help? I just wanted to get Blake and Allie here into the studio and just hear a little bit about their story and about the work that they do with their nonprofit, because I think it's pretty inspiring. So, Blake and Allie, welcome.
Wow.
Thanks
hey
for
guys.
Being here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blake, just tell us a little bit about what your nonprofit is. What is it that you do? And then maybe, you know, tell us a little bit like how it's kind of unique and tell us, you know, how that all got started.
Mm. Well, thank you for having me. It's great to see you, Greg and Eric. I love you. Hi.
Hey.
And hi to everybody listening out there. Man, what Chase Oaks is doing, I'm just humbled to be a part of it. It's great to have my wife here. Say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
So, it isn't just me starting a nonprofit. It was my wife and I both praying together, dreaming together, God, would you have us do this? And it was a season that was really a hard season. It was a season where I was sort of stepping out of full-time church work and was sort of burnt out. Hmm. And so I was like, well, what do you want to do? I don't know. I don't know how to build. And so I started building some stuff in my backyard, and it wasn't like sexy. Yeah. It wasn't like this is awesome. No, it was me in the backyard, you know, and I bought a stack of barnwood and I started building stuff and selling it on Craigslist. So
yeah.
there's the sexy part. And we didn't have any money. It was $15,000 that we had made the year before as this hobby. And so my wife's looking at me like, are we going to make it? Are you crazy?
Have you lost your mind?
Have you lost your mind? Yeah. And so we start this wood shop called Legacy Building, and I started building stuff. And while I was doing that, I had done a lot of missions work, and I just really love to provide opportunity for people, to create an opportunity for folks that have nothing. And so on my missions work that I had done, a lot of missionaries and organizations always told me, you know, we just want to try to get the men doing something. There was a lot of things, initiatives for women to do sewing and jewelry, but they're like, we just don't have anything to get the men busy. Huh. And I was like, okay, well, would you need a wood shop? And so I had said that to several missionaries, and they were like, yes. And so, Allie, tell the story of the very first one that happened. And it wasn't like I was trying to start a nonprofit. It was just like, it's really kind of humbling the way that it really got started. Here's the real story.
Yeah, this is definitely years before the nonprofit was even in existence. Blake just had gone on a mission trip and met some orphans who needed to have the ability to provide for themselves when they got out of this orphanage. And so these orphans, a couple of them, came to America with their mom and dad, and we discovered that one of them was passionate about woodwork, and after talking to him, he told us that he had, you know, five tools. If he could have these five tools, he could build anything, and he could start providing for the orphans. He actually wasn't even considering it for himself. He was thinking about his brothers and sisters. And so Blake took him out into our wood shop. At the time, we're literally jumping from a cush job to
nothing.
To nothing. Literally hoping, you know, we can get our teeth cleaned maybe once a year. It was scary.
Yeah.
But
no insurance.
We didn't have anything really financially to give, but mm-hmm. Blake took him out into the shop, and we had two of every tool that Nash, this orphan, had on his list that he needed. So he said,
Pastor Blake, I went to Home Depot, and these are the five things that I need. And he had written down like a circular saw, a jigsaw, you know, and a couple of other things. And I'm like, that's funny. I've got every one of those. I can give you those.
So literally, this nonprofit started from five tools that we threw into a tote for him to take back to Africa with him. And we thought, maybe that's it. Maybe that's what God wanted us to do. Blake was hiring addicts and people out of prison in the backyard. And that was kind of a ministry in and of itself. And
To build stuff with our
business.
Because that had blown up, right? I mean, there was a lot of, like, I mean, just from that idea
alone. It eventually did. Yeah. Legacy Building in Nashville, it's still going. It's a great company. Yeah. And I just started it because I wanted to help people and provide opportunity for people. So breaking the cycle of poverty, that's sort of the tagline of our nonprofit now. That's sort of always been my heart. I just love doing that. And so it started with this wood shop in my backyard, building furniture and teaching guys to do that. But all along the way, I've wanted to do that wherever I was.
Wow.
And so it started kind of happening. And that one in Africa, it turned into a full-blown trade school where there was a guy that was hired indigenous that teaches these kids. There's 250 orphans in this orphanage, and now they pump out woodworkers like crazy. There's all kinds of – they build all of the beds, all the tables, all of the desks, all happen for the orphanage inside of that wood shop. And so it turned into this really cool thing. It kind of ruined me. It just ruined me.
Huh. Yeah.
So this song by Sarah Groves during that season called I Saw What I Saw, she went and saw the poverty around the world, and there's a line in there that says, your courage asks me, what am I afraid of? And your courage asks me, what am I made of? And that thought, what am I made of? What can I do? What am I afraid of? I mean, they have nothing. Like I say, I have nothing. They got nothing. And so for me to provide a table saw, it seems humble. It seems like it's nothing. But I often feel like this isn't that big of a deal. But yet God's used it. And, it, you know, we've done like 10 or 12, not a whole lot. It's not like I'm, you know, World Vision or Compassion International, but this is the little thing that I feel like the Lord's asked me to do, and we've been faithful with that. And Allie and I, you know, this year we did 8.
Wow.
But for her and the family, that means I was out like over 45 days away from the family, just going to these remote villages, installing wood shops for people that have nothing. And it's usually a small team of 5 to 7 people that are with me. And, you know, it's not real sexy.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And not to cut you off, but just as you start to talk about that, I want you to talk some more about that, because it seems like, because I've heard a little bit of your story and the nonprofit work that you do, and it can be easy to assume that the chips just sort of whatever the analogy is, just sort of fell into place, you know, and it's just like one door after the other, and that you're just sort of walking through, and it seems like maybe it was just sort of easy for you to do that, maybe because of your personality or just because God just likes you more or something, you know, and just gives you opportunities or something like that. But then when you start to talk, just like what you said, like the number of days away or this amount of work or the stress or whatever, what does it feel like to sort of, in all of those steps, respond to God's call and to do it? Like, what does it feel like? I mean, does it feel like God's opening all kinds of doors and stuff, or does it just feel like it's really hard work? Or
yeah, so, you know, you think about the fact that this year there was 8, and I'm just one guy, and mm-hmm. so there's only 12 months. So once a month,
yeah,
I'm gone for a week. So when you start putting it down into the days that I'm actually gone, And I'm telling my girls again, hey, I'm leaving again. I'm sorry. But this, you know, this kind of unfolded. And sometimes it happens. It really is fast. Sometimes it's like somebody will walk up and go, hey, man, we've been praying and we would really love it if you'd consider coming to us. And here's why. And then you're like, oh, gosh, when do you need me? Huh. And it's like, a month. Can you come in a month? And then my wife's like, are you serious? Right?
Yeah.
And then there's times that it's like the last one I just did in Panama. It took 2 years to get it to where I was ready and everybody was on board to, you know, it's international travel always takes a ton of planning and preparation and getting the right tools in the right place, you know, and finding where the tools are going to be. All of those are a lot of logistics. So there's a lot of logistics behind it. And so, yeah, this next coming year, 19, there's already like six shops that are wanting to go in. And I'm like, God, how in the world? You know, because they're like $5,000 to $10,000 a shop, and a lot of it's self-funded. And I'm like, Lord, this is a lot bigger than me.
Yeah.
You got to send people, and you got to help me out, get this done.
Well, and I think, too, in the current social media age that we're in right now, where, you know, I follow your organization on Facebook, and so I'll see this great video of Blake with some cool people in an exotic location, and you got these tools there, and I'm like, oh, that's just really cool, you know, and just Blake just popped out of nowhere with all this, and it just popped up, and he's, you know, he's really energetic, and it just happened, and wow, it must be nice to be Blake. And I think as we've talked about it, it's like, I didn't really think about when you go somewhere, you gotta scout out all these tools, and then you gotta get them there, and then you gotta, you know, actually work it in. And
when you get to the shop, then you gotta build.
You gotta actually do stuff. Yeah. And I think in this day and age, it's interesting how we can get into that spot where we can see other people making a difference, and maybe think, oh, that just comes easy for them, or that doesn't require the work. But when we engage, and it's just a little hard that. I don't know, just this disconnect.
It's easy to assume that God must not be in it if it's hard.
Whereas when I hear you talking and we actually get into the story, you're like, okay, to get to that point where you're able to shoot a pretty cool video of something, it's like there's a ton of heartache and sacrifice and hardship that comes into that. I think, explain to me a little bit, because I think even with that, when you were talking about the nonprofit, that, you know, where you're at today with having a nonprofit that is, you know, making an impact worldwide, to hear how it started, I think the assumption we can make sometimes is we hear it and you're like, it's almost like God shined down on you this logo of Gifted Global with a beaming light and tools just falling down like manna from heaven, and like, oh, Blake, go send these. And that's not the way it worked at all, that it was more of just a kind of in a moment sort of thing. Can you elaborate on that a little bit about how the idea kind of started a little bit smaller? I mean, I know you already talked about that a bit. But.
Do you have anything? Share? Yeah, yeah.
So we started with a bucket of tools in Kenya, and we ended up taking the family there, which was not the plan, but that was God's plan, and we said yes, and it was scary, and there was a lot of sacrifice and unknowns. And then we came home, and we had a friend who had just moved to Costa Rica. So we didn't have this huge, like, vision of, oh, we're going to go start doing this all over the world. It was, we said yes to this one. And, you know, who knows what's next.
Right.
But, God, that was so cool. If you want to do that again, we would love to be a part of it. So our friend who bought property in Costa Rica said, there's a church there. I don't know if, I mean, I'll help you. I'll help fund it if you'll come. I know nothing about wood or tools. So if you'll come, I'll fund it and you can put it in. Like, literally, we didn't ask. We didn't go hunt it down. It just, this guy heard that we had done this one time.
Wow.
And there we were. We found ourselves in a second shop in another country going, what?
How did we get here? How,
we just said yes once, and here we are. It wasn't like we had this vision, this huge vision that God had given us of traveling all over the world and breaking the cycle of poverty. We just knew there was one, and we could do this one. And if he wanted to do it again,
right,
it would we would be available to do it again.
So saying the statement, break the cycle of poverty, such an elusive, massive statement. Like, that's what I do. Thank you.
Yeah,
that's, step to the
well,
side.
Good job, Blake. Well,
please step. Let me break the cycle of poverty, everybody.
And even when we started the nonprofit, like, there weren't eight people standing in line saying, come see us. Yeah. I mean, it was, Lord, do you have anyone? We didn't even have. We started the nonprofit, and there was no other wood shop ready to be put in. Nobody was standing in line asking, but we felt like we knew this is what God wanted us to do. So we said yes. And then we just started praying and expecting that He would answer those prayers. So we had eyes that were open, waiting to see where He was going to take it. It wasn't our vision. It was His.
Right.
And the burden that He had given us, it's a little burden. I mean, it's our teeny tiny little nonprofit. We're making a dent.
Yeah, Eric, to answer your question, it's usually just taking the right next step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just one, okay, I'll do that, God. And then you're asked again, you know, I'll do that. And then it's funny how it starts moving and it starts becoming bigger than you had ever dreamed.
But I think with certain people, like you guys would be a great example of that, that there are people that they take the next step, but it's because they were open to that next step too, that there was a willingness between the two of you to say, hey, we're going to pause long enough to hear what the situation is speaking to us or this person is speaking to us to and to connect it to what you have, not what you don't have, but you're like, well, we have tools, like we can, which is, I mean, whenever it's like a gift or a strength that we have in ourselves, we often downplay that strength where other people are like, man, that's massive. And for us, it's like, is this really that big of a deal?
Right.
But I think what I've learned from you guys is that openness is the thing that maybe does make it, is the thing that makes a difference with people that do take those steps of faith versus ones that don't, is like, hey, you're actually looking for that.
Yeah, and expecting
that
God's going to give direction, you know, that you're praying for direction and you know that that direction might be hard, but you're expecting for God to say something. And so, and I think that makes a huge difference. I know in different seasons of my life when I've maybe been frustrated with God, and then I can then look back and say, but, you know, I think that God was giving opportunities. I just didn't like those opportunities or whatever. Or there were opportunities for me to engage, but those just seemed a little small for what I wanted to do with my life. And I think that with you, He started off pretty small. And that saying, you know, and your willingness to be generous. And like you say, like, it's like a small thing, you know, that you gave away five of your tools. It's like, I don't know if I'd give away five of my tools. You know what I mean? I mean, that's not a small thing, you know.
Some of us don't have five tools to give away, but that's for other reasons. Yeah.
But I mean, but that kind of, you know, willingness to be generous or willingness to be open to sort of maybe opened up other opportunities, opened up other things. And I think that's inspiring. And I think it's, and it's inspiring for me and hopefully for everybody listening that's a doable thing that, you know, if we want to be, you know, make a difference with our lives, 5 years from now, there's probably little forks in the road every day that God's given us, to engage in people's lives or to say yes, to turn right rather than to turn left or whatever. I think your story sort of illustrates that, and it's pretty cool.
And that's why it's called Gifted Global. We love using our gifts for God's glory, but helping other people's gifts shine. And sometimes it's just learning to be powerfully present. So I like to say your ministry will only be as effective as you are present. And being present just means, well, that was an amazing conversation. I think God sent me that conversation, and the answer is yes. So how can I help? And what gifts can I bring to the table? And can I help some gifts shine in you and your ministry and whatever it is that where the Lord would send you? So it's sort of like just kind of waking up to what God's doing around you.
Yeah. So what has this process, this whole story, what has it done in your life or in your marriage? I mean, it's obviously impacting the people that you're working with. How has God used it to impact you?
Allie?
Yeah.
It's impacted our family greatly. Sometimes we feel like, oh, unfortunately, our kids have global hearts now. Mm. They have a heart for the world, and that probably means they're going to not be close to home
right.
as adults. But it's affected us deeply, and yeah. our eyes are open more now than they were even 10 years ago to see even here stateside, you know, a family or a ministry in the inner city of Tampa or the inner city of Louisville who's doing great things, and how we can just come alongside and do our part to help them do their part
right.
in their ministry. And
yeah,
it's,
so
it's affected our family greatly.
You say the word sex trafficking, and my kids think of girls that they know. You say orphanage, and my girls have held the kid that was kicked out by his parents and his uncle didn't want him, and they were burnt and abused. Like, they know those orphans, and know, so they've felt personally the what poverty does and how what abuse does around the world, and they have a heart for the nations. So so yeah, it's affected us deeply, and because of that, my kids have this very humanitarian desire to want to be available for God all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't go into starting a nonprofit for that reason, but man, what a beautiful side effect to see how you jump in faith and your kids just go, "Dad, you're living a great story."
Huh. Yeah, that's cool.
And you make me want to live a great story too.
Yeah.
You know, earlier in this podcast, I know Greg was talking with Kevin about not feeling overwhelmed in a world full of need, and they talked about that and how Kevin's a person of hope, and I think for both of you, but Blake, I'll say this with your preaching of how you connect heart to an emotion to the world, to your life. I wonder how do you live with that tension of seeing things that break your heart worldwide in the community, for your family to see things that break your heart, and yet still have hope or not feel overwhelmed. What does that look like? What does that look like for you? What have you learned about still being able to open your heart up to hard things, but also actually doing something about it and not being overwhelmed? I'd just love to hear your perspective.
Yeah. So, you know, you go, "I want to be a kingdom of God guy. I want to do kingdom efforts." But then you break it down to a slice of like, well, how do I do that? Yeah. And what does it look like for me? And you go, I feel like there's so much out there to do, and so many, you know, organizations that need, and who doesn't want a $10,000 wood shop? Like, you know, you feel like people will take advantage of you, and there's all those things you go, I'd just rather not.
Right.
But in the end, when you walk away with the simple, I mean, just keep this simple, the simple satisfaction of going, I think God wants us to do that. And so I'm going to do it. And not having any idea how you're going to do it, but just the trust, the sheer like tenacity to say, okay, you're a big God, and I'm going to keep taking another step forward in faith, and a little bit of fear and a little bit of crazy. we're going to do this, and it doesn't make sense. But and my wife's looking at me like, are you sure? Again, you're leaving? And how much does it cost? And there's like real, you know, questions. And I'm like, I don't know, baby. I just feel like we're supposed
to. Financial stress is like every couple, every person who's married listening, like they know what that is. Mm-hmm. And like this involves real money that involves, you know, it's real risk for you guys. Yeah.
Right. And we've talked about that like, you know, because I think everybody, I mean, myself included, but I think our listeners that are listening are like, I want to make a difference in the world, and yet there is a difference of saying that and actually when the cards get put on the table, that there is risk that comes at that point. So a lot of times it's financial risk or safety, and you want to play it wisely as you can, but there is a point where it comes to a spot where you're like, is my heart broken enough in this area to take a risk, big or small?
Even students, you know, if you're going to help somebody in your school that other people are scorning, there's social risk. You know, there's like always risk involved. Yeah.
And up to this point, I should say this, you're talking about our finances. We have chosen not to take anything. So we've done this at our own time and money. And so our nonprofit's committed to saying 10% will be the most we'll ever take. you know, for any kind of operational expenses. Mm-hmm. But up to now, you know, we're almost three years in, and we're going, hey, this is kind of, I'm starting to get bitter at this thing. It's taking too much. And I need to maybe pay myself. And my board's saying, hey, you should pay yourself. I'm like, yeah, maybe I should.
Yeah.
And Allie's saying, yeah, you
yeah,
should.
Yeah, that's right. We should have done that a long time ago. Okay, so Blake, you're also one of the teaching pastors here, and Chase Oaks loves you. And usually when you come preach, you have a nice opportunity to prepare what you're going to say. And I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to put your teaching pastor hat on a little bit.
All right.
Get ready to preach.
Get ready. Yeah, pull out the preacher. No, but just to, you know, I think it's safe to assume that anybody who's listening to this podcast is doing so because they're open and they want to make a difference in the world. And a whole lot of us look at your story and maybe are inspired, maybe are intimidated, or a whole lot of us listening maybe don't quite know what to do. Maybe we've prayed for God's direction and not quite sure how to respond. Like, teach us a little bit. Like, what would you, or give us some advice, you know, like what would you advise folks that want to make a difference, but they don't know what to do, or they feel scared, or they feel intimidated? Like, tell us what to do.
Hmm.
Or Allie, if she's, yeah.
I say, ask God, ask him for a burden, ask him for what is it he wants you to do? I know, years ago when we were in Nashville, I felt this, the church that we were in was kind of downtown, a little bit rough area. And I would see kids outside, not in our church, but running in the neighborhood. And I thought, are they cared for? Are they, mm-hmm. what's their education like? I felt this, like my heart would beat faster when I'd see these children. And so I just started asking the Lord, like, what can I help? I don't even know what that looks like. And I mentioned it to one of the pastors on staff, and he said, there's a ministry down the street that tutors these kids. They need tutors. And I was like, oh, okay. And our schedules were crazy, and I had probably every excuse of the reasons not to do it, but I had asked the Lord, show me what to do. And it was one little thing. I wasn't going to change the life of all of the kids in the neighborhood, but there were two mm-hmm. that I tutored once a week. I gave up an hour and a half, 2 hours once a week. And he gave me that.
Yeah.
It was a gift from him because I asked.
Right.
So I just encourage you to ask. He'll show you if you ask him.
Right.
I often call that being blessed with a burden. Mm-hmm. And so when you ask God for that thing that my wife's talking about, where you go, would you make my heart beat a little faster? Whatever that is, just don't sit on it.
Yeah.
Like, go, I'm going to do something with that. I don't know what it is. I don't know how it's going to look, but come on, sucker. Like, let's get started. Yeah. Right. And so, sometimes it's trusting in the still small voice, learning to listen to the Holy Spirit. And that's where you're like, is that just in my head? Or mm-hmm. is that really you, God? And, I think that's a good word, Pastor Allie. He'll show you. He'll show you if you'll ask.
Yeah.
And I think there's a part where you had been sharing earlier, too, and Greg had this observation about how when you're praying, you expect God to answer, mm-hmm. you know, like, and not just in a, oh, yeah, he'll answer. But you're like, no, okay, I'm going to be listening. And if that voice pops up, it's like, okay, I can't just ignore that. I need to do something with that.
For example, 2 weeks ago, my wife and I woke up and she was doing her Bible study, and I walked out. I said, I think I'm supposed to buy a wood shop that's going to be installed here in the United States. It's time to do another domestic one. And she goes, go ahead.
And I literally for 2 days had felt like we're about to do a domestic wood shop. I have no idea where, who, when.
Hmm. So I was like, okay, baby, then I'm going to start buying tools. And so I literally bought a wood shop. I put it in my trailer. It's sitting in my backyard. And now I'm going, okay, God, just tell me where I'm supposed to take this stuff.
So should we say, like, anybody listening, if they want a wood shop? Yeah.
Yes, please.
You know, it's interesting what you just said a minute ago, Blake. I'm still how, like, we might be blessed with the burden. Maybe we don't use that phrase or mm-hmm. we just have something. And then we think, well, is that God or is that me? And mm-hmm. I remember several years ago, someone challenged me because I was kind of, I can be very introspective. I can talk myself out of anything, you know. And someone challenged me saying, you know, if it's not contrary to what God's doing in the world, assume it's from God and just go till you get a no.
That's good.
You know, and it's like, oh my goodness. Like I can be like, I just assume that if it's God, then he's going to like line up everything. It's all going to sort of lay out. And it doesn't seem like maybe that's what you guys did, you know, or like waiting for everything to be lined up perfect or whatever. You just sort of.
We just did it.
You just did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was grungy and gross and murky and messy and sloppy. And, you know, I've never started a 501c3. Like, I've never had to do taxes for all. Like, you don't start it with all of that stuff in mind. Like,
right.
This is another organization that I've got to have on my plate and manage, right? And
yeah.
A lot of money that I've got to manage well. And there's a lot of resources that you've got to pray to come in and fundraising. Oh, I hate fundraising. So
I couldn't tell.
Yeah, even with the fundraising, I just kind of scared you with that fart noise.
Well, that's pretty realistic. Good, yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
So fundraising, I was like, I'll just use my gifts for God's glory. So I ride my bike. That's how I do my fundraising. I do not want to have a gala. Do not make me put on a nice suit and make everybody laugh again. Yeah. Like, I just want to do something that maybe somebody will get behind. So I ride my bike from the... This is stupid, too. Like, I just decided I'm going to ride my bike from the tip of Florida all the way to the top, like the whole coast of Florida. So I start in Key West, and I go all the way to Jacksonville. It's like 600 miles. It takes me a week, and it's crazy. People get behind it. Like, cool, he's using his gifts for God's glory. I'll get behind that because I know it's supporting. And so people buy shirts, and they support us on our ride. That's how we've done it. My wife doesn't think it's the greatest idea, but...
Not the safest.
Yeah. So anyways.
Well, I want to thank you guys for sharing your story, but in the inspiration side of it too, that, I mean, your story is unique and powerful and really cool, but I think it should, you know, cause all of us to say, hey, it's not, nothing ever starts off as clean as it looks from either the Facebook post or even from someone sharing a story up there, that there is a dirty, grungy process. But with it, I've always been inspired by the creativity that you bring to each initiative. I mean, each sermon, but also each initiative that you do, like even what you were sharing with the bike of like, it's like so many of us would look like, well, I don't know, I hate fundraising and I put this thing out. I did a GoFundMe and it got $3. I'm not going to do anything more. And it's like, no, you're like, okay, well, what's the next thing I can do? I know how to bike, you know, I'm going to go bike for a bit. And so just thank you for sharing your story and for the difference it's making and man, best wishes for what you guys are doing on that too.
Thanks guys. Thanks for joining us.
Eric, you guys are awesome. We love you.
All right. And we're back. Gotta love Blake Bergstrom.
You do. It's always going to be entertaining with Blake, you know. Yeah.
You know, Eric, it's interesting because this was part two of a couple of podcasts around how to engage in a world of need, and it can just be overwhelming. And we just picked two people that we knew personally. To talk to Kevin and talk to Blake. Very different stories, but both doing their unique approaches to come around issues of global poverty. And my question is, you know, my head's kind of spinning and thinking about what my takeaways are. What are, as we look at these two podcasts, the conversation with Blake and then earlier the conversation with Kevin, what are some of the takeaways that you have?
Yeah, I think for me, one of them is, and you've mentioned this previously, but there's an openness and a boldness that stands out to me that I don't think define my life as much as they should. I can turn up the dial on both of those.
Particularly in Blake's story.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think there's a part where it's easy for us to write out our story on what it's going to be. And if we decide to engage in a world of need, it's like, this is how it's going to look. And I think what struck me with both of them, really, with both of the conversations, was a willingness to be adaptable, but then to commit. You know, so it's like, okay, you know, I'm not sure if this is what God wants me to do, but if this is the need that gets presented, and Blake's story was a lot about that, it's like, all right, well, then we're going to go full into this. And the creativity and the passion that he shows with that is incredible. And the same thing with Kevin, that Kevin has a openness to whatever situation that he you know, around the world that he goes into. But then as he does make a commitment. He has a principled commitment and decides to engage there. So I think I'm just left feeling like I need to spend some time thinking, how open am I really? Like,
right.
And then how bold am I really? Like, am I really thinking big enough? And listening to both of those guys, for me, my initial response is, well, probably not. Probably not thinking as big as I need to.
Right. Yeah.
What about you?
You know, I think there's a couple of things. One, particularly going back to the conversation with Kevin, that there's a responsibility that I have that the abundance that God has blessed me with is not just for me. It is to help others who are in need. But sometimes just giving money, it makes me feel better than it actually helps, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's a thoughtfulness that is my responsibility,
yeah,
you know, to ask the right questions and to think about strategy and those types of things. But then not to use that argument is something that as an excuse for me not to give.
It's like, I'll never know enough, so I guess I just won't give it.
I just won't, because it's going to get abused or whatever. So, and we can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, and then I think with Blake, I see in essence, in scripture, it talks about God, entrusting with much those who have been faithful with little.
Yeah.
And I see opportunities as something that God entrusts to us. And I see with Blake and Allie of them being faithful with some smaller opportunities. And they said yes, and they were open-handed with that, and they stepped into that at some personal risk to them, and
yeah,
they stepped into that. And God has just sort of continued to open up opportunities for them, you know? And so I think that the takeaway for me is wondering, what are those opportunities that I might not even notice on a week-to-week basis or something? Because, so I think I need to think about that some more and keep my eyes open.
It's almost like we think that there's going to be this light from the sky that comes down with an organization written on a piece of paper that you need to commit your life to this place, or even a country. It's like, oh, I'm going to spin the globe and it's going to stop magically on the place I need to be. And often there's something right in front of us that may seem small but could turn into something quite big.
Right, yeah. So it's been a great couple of conversations, and it's challenging. And I hope for all of our listeners, it's been challenging for you as well. And so we sure enjoyed it.
Well, and we'd love to also hear from you about what you're learning about engaging in a world full of need, what challenges you're running into, or what organizations you've jumped into that you're particularly passionate about. And the great thing is, you can let us know by going to our website, page2podcast.com, and leaving a comment. We'd love to interact with you and hear what you're learning, and we're just grateful that you're journeying with us, and we hope you'll continue to do so. As always, we are so grateful for our friends with the Center for Church Renewal, who have allowed us to record in their studio. We're also grateful for David Powers, our technical expert, and Reflect, our musical expert and musician, is probably a better way to say that. So thanks to those guys, and thank you to you for journeying with us. We'll see you next time.